listening to Good Morning, the podcast talking all things grief with honesty and humour. Welcome back to the Good Morning podcast.
We are your hosts, Sal and Im, and we are coming in today with a special bonus episode that is all about sleep. So I don't know if you guys know this, but today is actually World Sleep Day. So it's a very apt time to be putting this episode out. We struggled so hard to sleep when our mums died. Even years later, we still do sometimes. So it's such an important conversation to be having. Who are we talking to?
So we are chatting with Olivia Arizzolo, who is Australia's leading sleep expert. Because like you say, Im, right? Often, sleep is one of the first things that gets messed with when we're going through a loss or a challenging time in general. And I know for us both, we struggle to get good sleep, and then lack of good sleep like exacerbates grief, and it can be a bit of a vicious cycle. So it's really important to understand like why grief impacts our sleep, how we can improve our sleep. And Olivia was super generous with all of her knowledge, wasn't she? And shared lots of common sleep misconceptions, which can actually hopefully improve the quality of sleep that you're getting. And we also talked about your chronotypes, which are the natural preferences of your body for wakefulness and sleep. It's super interesting. If you guys haven't come across this concept before, you're going to really enjoy it. And I think we had a couple of light bulb moments, didn't we, Im?
Well, I finally understand why you enjoy getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, for starters.
Why I'm a weirdo.
Why you're an absolute weirdo. You're like, yeah, I'm up at five. I'm just thinking, why would you willingly get up at that time unless you have to get an international flight somewhere? But it makes sense now because that's your chronotype.
Yeah, and also like, I think it's really interesting to know this stuff because you can kind of alter your sleep kind of schedule via this. Because for me, like, if I go to bed at 11 p.m., I am useless the next day, even if I get a similar amount of sleep. And so it's interesting to learn about your kind of cycle and what chronotype you are. And they're different, like, is it wolf, bear, lion and dolphin, I think, are the four chronotypes. So yeah, very, very keen to hear what you guys are once you've listened.
And I can't go to sleep anytime before 11 p.m. Like, that's weird for me. Like, I just don't know how people can go to sleep earlier than that. Anyway, before we get into a whole episode about this episode, it's a very fascinating one. And guys, before we get into it, don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, as it can help it get seen by others who may need it. And if Good Morning has helped you in any way, please, we would be so grateful if you could leave us a rating or a short review. And also check out our shop. We've put some signed copies of our book up there. We've got a Griefy as Fuck bundle where you can buy our book and our affirmation card at the same time. And yeah, we've got lots of other exciting things in the works.
We do. We're going to be launching the Good Morning Club soon, which is a membership where you can meet like-minded people who are going through similar situations to you. We know how lonely grief is, so we want to bring you the opportunity to make friends and maybe meet the Sal to your Im. So watch this space. You can sign up if you're interested to know more. There's a link in the show notes. And yeah, we can't wait to bring it to you. Anyway, enough of us.
Before we bore you to sleep about this sleep episode,
let's get into it. Olivia, welcome to the pod. It's so good to have you joining us today.
Thank you so much. I know we've been trying to align our busy schedules for quite some time, so it's wonderful to be sitting down with you lovely ladies and doing this.
It's so good to have you here. And you are one of Australia's, if not the leading, sleep expert in this country. And it's a massive topic that we hear from our listeners about a lot, don't we, Im? So really excited to get into this with you.
We do. And many of our listeners, Olivia, they're grieving, and sleep issues is so common for them after loss. Sal and I definitely had some sleep issues as well, which we'll get into. But can you tell us, like, how does grief impact our sleep, and why is it so common to have issues with sleep when we're grieving?
Yeah, more than happy to share. I feel like, you know, we're all aware that when we're stressed, we don't sleep properly, and whether that's anecdotally or personally. And when you think about the impact of grieving as a stressor. There is, you know, especially when it's somebody close to you, there's arguably no bigger stressor than losing somebody that you're really close to, you know. And in terms of specifically how it works with the mechanics in the brain, basically stress hormone cortisol increases when we are stressed. As a result of that, we are more likely to stay in light stages of sleep through the night. As a result of that, we're more likely to wake up easily, you know, if there's a light going on or a traffic outside or, you know, even a subtle noise that we wouldn't otherwise detect. If we're in those lighter stages of sleep, we're much more easily awoken. And that's a direct result of being in that higher state of stress during the night. And that's a direct result of being highly stressed and experiencing the grief. And I think it's particularly important and particularly relevant with grief, because grief doesn't end just because we sleep. There's no end point to it. It's something that once somebody close to us passes, when we wake up, they're not there. Mm-hmm. When we go to bed, they're not there. And that's something that is pervasive day after day after day. And that means that we have this chronic elevation of this stress hormone cortisol. So we're in this chronic state of heightened alertness. And this is why we find it really difficult to sleep well. Because essentially,
and I think it's one of those things, isn't it, that, sorry, grief can exacerbate sleep, but then lack of sleep can exacerbate grief, can't it? And Im, I know for us, like, our sleep changed, didn't it, after our mum's died. And we, like, I used to be such a heavy sleeper. And all of a sudden, I just, like, sleep was just hard to come by. Or as soon as my head hit the pillow, it was like my brain was, like, started to think about my mom, and I'd have all these kind of racing thoughts, and then I couldn't get to sleep. And it was just like, and then the next day, my grief would feel overwhelming. And it was like a real cycle. And I know that's really common, isn't it, Im?
You were, like, almost afraid to go to sleep, weren't you, Sal?
Yeah, and that's what we actually hear a lot, don't we, from people. Like, they don't like going to sleep. Is that something that you come across, Olivia? Like, there's almost like a, yeah, it becomes something that's like, but not a pleasure, really.
Yeah, definitely. Because what happens is, when you struggle to sleep, you have this memory that last night was hard. So sleep in itself brings on anxiety. You think, am I going to be able to sleep well? Am I going to lay there restless, tossing and turning all night? Am I going to lay there worrying about the person I've just lost, wondering why, what happened, what could have I done differently? And the thing is, in the evening, why these thoughts often arise is because during the day, whether we realize it or not, many of us try very, very hard to distract ourselves. Now, this is normal because fundamentally we need a certain amount of distraction to function. It's not conducive to everyday just participation in life if we are literally crying on the ground day after day. At some point, we have to say to ourselves, okay, this is really hard, but I need to switch on. I've got kids, I have a partner, I have a job, and I have to stay focused. And I know that I need to grieve, but I also need to stand up and be a parent, be a partner, right? The thing is that that's when we've got our thinking brain on, right? We're taking conscious control of the fact that we need to essentially mask our emotions.
Yes.
In the evening, what are we meant to think about? When our bed hits the pillow, there's no thing that we have to focus our attention on. We don't have to think about, you know, attending to the kids or that email at work. We are left to our own thoughts. And if you haven't processed that grief, then chances are those thoughts are going to come, and they're going to come like a ton of bricks, and they're going to leave you with such a racing mind, such anxiety, such disturbance, because you actually haven't addressed the underlying trauma and the underlying pain that the passing of your loved one has brought on.
I know, like, in the early months especially, probably the first year, the sleeping was really traumatizing for me, because it would be a time where I would have all those thoughts and I would ruminate, and then I'd have nightmares about my mom and everything that happened. It's like I couldn't get a break. And then I always found myself waking up around, like, first, like, the crack of dawn, and I just could not get back to sleep. And all I'd do is just lie there going, like, I know I haven't had a full night's sleep, just going around and around and around in my head about the fact that she was dead. And there was just no break from it. It was so exhausting. Even sleeping was exhausting, you know, deep in grief.
Yeah, I remember for you, it was a massive issue, wasn't it? And yeah. Olivia, what can we do if we are really struggling to sleep, whether we're struggling to fall asleep or we're waking up or we've got insomnia? Like, what can we do to really help ourselves?
Okay, so I think, you know, I like to call this like top line sleep support, and there's like underlying sleep supports. And I think usually I would have just said, you know, the immediate answer to that question is to address the top line, which is, you know, the behaviors relating to sleep, you know, your sleep hygiene, your bedtime routine, your sleep supplements. That's definitely relevant, and we'll go into that. But I think with regards to your listeners who are struggling because they've lost somebody they care deeply about, knowing that if you are not sleeping well, there's a great chance that that's a signal that you need support to help process this. And that can come in a range of different ways. That may come through traditional therapy, you know, with a psychotherapy, a counselor. That may also come through alternative forms of therapy, you know, acupuncture or, you know, nature therapy or art therapy. You know, there's no one size fits all. But the thing is that if you have that mental rumination in the evening when your head hits the pillow, especially, or, you know, throughout the night, then your subconscious is trying to tell you, I'm really disturbed right now. And you're not letting, when you're consciously awake, you're not letting this disturbance come through. So I think that's a really important consideration, particularly for your listeners, that I want to share, because it is important. But of course, that's something that we all understand is an important part of grief, to get that support. Mm-hmm. But often we may not recognize that poor sleep is a signal that our body is trying to tell us that we need extra support in that specific way. So then, to complement that, you know, what are some of those top line fundamental sleep supports that, by using these, yes, you may still struggle because you are dealing with the grief and the dealing with the stress, and that's heavy and it's hard. But the thing is that if you use these top line sleep strategies, you know, sleep routines, if you will, sleep supplements, then it will make it a hell of a lot easier to sleep.
Hygiene.
Yeah, yeah. So sleep hygiene. It's just sleep hygiene just refers to behaviors related to sleep that can improve sleep. It's a very fancy term, but it's a very basic meaning, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, in terms of like the, you know, the best of the best for my clients, as in the ones that I've advised, you know, 100% of my private clients have seen improvements with my signature bedtime routine in less than 7 days. So it's been extremely helpful for them. And that involves blocking out blue light by using blue light glasses for 2 hours before bed. In clinical trials, that's been found to reduce nighttime wakings by 66%, which is huge. And in terms of, you know, the importance of blocking out blue light, melatonin, its number one suppressor is light. And it is essentially controlled by light. So yes, stress is going to have a huge impact on your alertness overall, but in terms of the hormone that dictates sleepiness specifically, light is one of the most potent impactors on that. So blocking out blue light 2 hours before bed, and also doing as much as you can to reduce all light in the house, because as soon as the brain sees light, it not only suppresses melatonin, that sleepiness hormone, but it also increases cortisol, that stress hormone that we were talking about before. So your stress is going to be much worse if you are in a really light-filled house, if you are watching TV, if you are reading a Kindle even, if you are on social media. Anything with a highly bright light or any light at all is going to really exacerbate that stress level and suppress that melatonin level.
Doesn't help when we do a lot of like doom scrolling before bed, right? Like that's, I mean, so guilty of that. But it's interesting, like hearing about the stress hormones and how much that impacts sleep. We do a lot of work, we learn a lot around the nervous systems and how we've got the parasympathetic nervous system, which is rest and digest, and then the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight. And I know when people are grieving, like a lot of the times we can be stuck in that kind of sympathetic overdrive in that fight or flight, right? So there's stress hormones are really high in the body, which is obviously making it really difficult for us to get into that rest and digest mode, right, which would then impact sleep.
For sure.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, I love that you've touched on that because it really links everything. So cortisol, the stress hormone I've been speaking about, that is one of the most dominant of the fight or flight system. So when we're talking about the sympathetic nervous system and fight or flight, and you're talking about cortisol, it's all one in the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they're just interchangeable terms. And I think that's really helpful also because, you know, so this routine that I recommend, that's step one, but the other steps also really work, not because they have such an impact on melatonin, but actually because most of them activate that parasympathetic calming nervous system. You know, diffusing lavender, that's the next step. Lavender is a potent activator of the parasympathetic, and it can have such an incredible impact that if you actually take lavender tablets, there's, you know, 80 milligrams of lavender oil in a lavender tablet, that has been found to reduce anxiety as much as a sleeping pill.
I didn't even know that existed. Lavender tablets. Oh my God, I'm going to buy out a bottle.
Next minute, me and him buy out the whole of Australia's lavender tablets.
Yeah, look out. next podcast sponsor.
Yeah, right.
Actually going to investigate that.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I had no idea that you can even get them in tablet form.
Huge. You can, yeah. And so literally this study, it tested the effects of lavender oil capsules versus benzodiazepines, you know, traditional sleeping pills. And it found that benzodiazepines reduced anxiety by 46% and lavender oil capsules reduced anxiety by 45%. And the researchers concluded they were as effective as each other.
Oh my God.
That's amazing. Yeah. I feel like with the benzodiazepines, though, like whenever I'd have that, or if I, ever I had a sleeping tablet, yeah, it'd help me get to sleep. Then I feel 10 times worse the next day, like so groggy and more anxious and doesn't actually help at all.
Right. Because actually what happens is it doesn't allow the body to go in naturalistic sleep. So essentially it just knocks you out. Very similar to as if you've had alcohol and you just get knocked out. Or you have a concussion and you just get knocked out. You don't get the rejuvenating qualities of sleep when you have a sleeping pill. It's just like your body and your brain is just unconscious. But actually, when we sleep naturally, we have such a high level of activity in our brains. They're really, really active, actually more active than they are during our waking state. And all of that activity is really important because it's important for detoxification, for memory consolidation, which helps us retain information, but also think clearly the next day. The hormonal processes, you know, like the regeneration of your neurotransmitters, you know, dopamine, serotonin, to help us feel alert. That happens during this naturalistic sleep, as does the recovery, cellular recovery from human growth hormone, which is produced in slow wave sleep. Now, all of these processes are dependent upon naturalistic sleep. And the research has found that when you are sleeping from sleeping pills or benzodiazepines, the body doesn't exhibit the same neurological patterns and brainwave patterns that it does that actually indicate it's going through that recovery, rejuvenation, replenishment process. So that's why in the morning, sure, you've slept, but you don't feel like you've slept.
Yes, and I can imagine a lot of our listeners are like struggling to sleep, taking sleeping pills or trying to, you know, do something to aid their sleep, and then they're not feeling any better. So this is like golden information. Thank you so much. I think all of the Good Morning listeners are, you know, stockpiling the old lavender pills from here on in. But
outside of those two steps, the next step is to disconnect from tech. I recommend 1 hour before bed. We all know that once we're scrolling, there's no end of scrolling. You know, there's an addictive quality of you know, social media. It keeps us awake longer. It emits blue light, which suppresses melatonin, that sleepiness hormone. So for a range of reasons, it's just really detrimental to our sleep. And we need to have a cutoff time. We can't just hope for the best and think, oh, you know, when I get tired, I'll turn it off, because it stimulates the brain. By using it, we don't get tired. You know, the creators of, you know, Facebook, Instagram, they're very smart and they're very well equipped to know that if they do certain things like reward us for, you know, for, they send us likes, you know, with noise and with sounds, it's very engaging for the brain. And so it's very hard to just switch off, especially at the end of the night, because what happens is the frontal lobe, which is responsible for decision making and logic and planning, that becomes dysfunctional the longer we've been awake. Now, there's
I think mine's missing. I don't know where that part of my brain is. Looking for it somewhere.
If you're holding a conversation, I'm pretty sure you are right now.
Logic, though? I don't know. None of that.
You're so far, no. But the longer we're awake, the more dysfunctional that area becomes. And there's actually research that says when we've been awake for 18 hours, we have the frontal lobe and the cognitive capacity of somebody who has a blood alcohol level of 0.05. Now, so 18 hours, if you look, sorry, it's no, it's 17 hours, 17 hours. So if you look at the, if you think about it, if we've woken up at 6 o'clock, that's only 11 o'clock the next night, sorry, that night, right? Yeah. And for somebody, you know, I personally work and live in our Western world and, you know, train in the morning and, you know, work all day and, you know, then I've got an event afterwards. It's not hard to be awake for 17 hours. But what happens is, because we've been awake for that long, you have this dysfunction of that brain region. So we actually can't make decisions logically or rationally. So the thought of getting off our phone, it doesn't seem sensible. We're like, nah, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's so true. I used to work in TV production, and like a 16-hour work day was like normal for me. But I remember, like, at the end of the 16 hours, I'd still be in like board meetings, ready for the, you know, shoot the next day. Mm-hmm. And I would feel drunk. Like, I just feel like, oh my God, I've got to drive home. And I'm actually like, I'm not feeling normal.
Yeah.
And that was just how we were functioning. But it really does like impact you. You do feel like you've had alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. I go to bed particularly early and, you know, sometimes I'll be with friends or whatever. And it's quite funny because sometimes they'll be like, oh, you know, stay up. And I'm like, no, I really need to go to bed. And then sometimes I might stay up and then like I literally like I'll be, you know, at a table and I'll just all of a sudden like fall asleep. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, God, I just, but because I feel like I can't control myself. I can't think clearly, you know, I can't just.
Yes, I can so relate to that. Like I'm normally in bed by like 9:30, 10. Like, yeah. And if I stay up, even on a weekend past 11, I'm like,
everything goes blurry.
Yes.
Sal's so great with her sleep hygiene. She like turns her phone on airplane mode and like, she's really good.
Yeah.
That's got some good boundaries.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, I try my best.
No, that's great. And can I just ask, has there ever been an emergency that, you know, you missed out on because your phone was in airplane mode?
My husband the other day locked himself out of the apartment. And basically it was like 11 at night because he took our dogs down to for a little nighttime toilet run. And then I was asleep. But he kept calling me and my do not disturb. I think if someone calls more than three times,
see?
It goes through. So.
Yes, it does. I've had that to me as well. And so it was an emergency, but it wasn't impacted by the fact that your phone was on do not disturb, right?
Yes.
How mad at him were you, Sal?
I was a bit grumpy, but, you know. And next question, because this is the one that I have been dying to ask you and to find out more about, because I don't think I've heard much about it before, and I don't think Im has either. Can you please tell us, what are chronotypes?
I would love to share what chronotypes are. So, sounds like a very complex concept, but it's actually very simple. And I'm sure many of your listeners have heard the terms morning lark, night owl.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same as this, except when it comes to chronotypes, it's more than just those two ends of the spectrum. So it's divided into three categories, and it really reflects your circadian rhythm preferences, which essentially means, do you like to get up and go to bed early? Do you feel super energetic in the morning? Or are you on the other end of the spectrum and you like to go to bed late, wake up late, and you got heaps of energy at the end of the day? And when it comes to chronotypes, there's actually this middle category, which is mostly energetic in the peak of the day and doesn't want to go to bed particularly early or late, doesn't want to wake up particularly early or late. They're just in the middle. So those three categories, the earliest, which is what you and I are, Sal, is the lion. Then you have bears in the middle. And then, Im, what you are is the wolf.
That is
very, very interesting. But what I actually love more about chronotypes is that although we are fit into these three categories, and okay, you're like, all right, that's interesting. You know, how is this going to help us sleep better? It actually tells us things about what we need in sleep. For example, how many hours we need to sleep for, which is such a common question. So lions actually, by the chronotypes, statistically need the least sleep. They're the ones that 7 hours is typically suitable for them, and they actually have the best sleep quality, which is quite interesting because I know that a lot of lions I speak to are the ones that, exactly as you and I have, very strict boundaries and very, strong priority on getting to sleep early, right? We know that if we don't get to sleep early, this is a bad situation. And that's not only related to, A, our low need for sleep overall, because often we want to get up quite early, so we factor in if we go to bed early, then we can wake up early, no problem. But there's also the fact that chronotypes also indicate personality traits. And for the lion, one of our personality traits is that we are health-oriented and risk-averse.
Interesting.
Super interesting.
I've just Googled it, and like, this is so interesting. So the lion, you get up really early and you're most productive in the morning. Maybe that's why Sal told me that she's really productive at 5 a.m. And I'm like, what?
If I get up at 5 a.m., I literally, it's like magic hour. I don't know if it's the same thing.
No, it's the best. I love it.
I don't get up at 5 a.m. unless I'm going overseas on a. I have to be at the airport early. That's the only time.
I love it. I like get so much done.
Yeah, I love it as well, and it's like my peace and sanctuary. But I tell you what, Em, you being the wolf, so according to the chronotype theory, correct me if wrong, but your energy peaks later in the day, and you often find that you actually come up with your best ideas and your best concepts in that really late, you know, past 8, 9 p.m., 9, 10, 11 p.m. is when you sort of rise to your absolute best. And also about wolves is they're happy to work independently. They're quite think outside of the box types, but they're also super, super social. So you'll find that in the late evening, you often like to be really creative, but also if you can, you like to be really social. And so I say that also because, sure, 5 a.m. to you might seem horrendous, but for Sal and I, ask us to do really productive, creative, thoughtful work at 9, 10 o'clock p.m., God, no.
Oh, my God, no.
Oh, my God, this is so funny. Do you remember I used to message you, like, late in the evenings with all my sleep thoughts, Sal?
Yeah, you know,
I'll be like, oh, sleep thought, because things like as soon as I like lie down, I'll have all these ideas for things late at night.
And then you probably wake up and get like loads of messages from me because I'm up thinking, like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, I actually would be no good to anyone trying to do any work at like 9 p.m. onwards. And actually my husband, he's a wolf like him. But he gets like 5 hours sleep a night, and if he gets more than that, he feels like really groggy and not good. But I'm like, you know, you hear like you should be getting 7 to 9 hours sleep. Is that a myth? Or because I'm always on at him, like, you need to sleep more. He's like, I feel fine on this amount of sleep. And then I'm like, oh my God, there's something wrong.
So statistically, 95% of the population needs 7 to 9 hours. There is the outliers. It's very, very uncommon. It's more uncommon than people think. Everyone thinks they're in that 5%, but often they're not appreciating that they will operate on those 5 hours, but then, you know, after a few months, they'll feel absolutely out of gas, completely burnt out, and like they need, you know, a week or a month of holiday. If you're sleeping sufficiently, you don't need to take a break from that sleep pattern to catch up on sleep later because you're getting the sleep you need. So I don't know what the case is for your partner, but yeah, I find often people think that, you know, getting less sleep is okay, but then they'll need that reset later. But that offers indicating that you're not getting enough sleep in the first place.
Interesting. I'll have that one on my sleeve next time we have that chat.
I think it's a gamer thing, Sal, like, because my partner is the same, like, he'll be up till 2 o'clock in the morning on weeknights. I'm like, what are you doing? And then just get up and work. He doesn't get up till about 9 a.m. and literally just rolls downstairs to start work. But it's like, he's fine. I'm like, I'm not fine from hearing you up gaming till like 2 o'clock in the morning. But like, and surely that stimulation is not doing wonders for them before they go to sleep too. Like, how do they do it?
Yeah. No, the research also really shows the detriment of having such a late sleep profile. So essentially like a late sleep schedule, you know, going to bed at 2 and waking up at 9, even though you may still be getting, you know, your 7 hours, what happens is after about 3-4 o'clock, the body prioritizes the deep sleep stage, REM sleep, instead of slow wave sleep. And REM sleep is super beneficial for memory consolidation and emotional regulation. But when it comes to physical recovery, immunity, you know, tissue repair, that's really in slow wave sleep. And that is primarily before 3 a.m. And so if you're only going to bed, and ideally that needs to be 2/3 of your total sleep time in deep sleep, right? But if you're only going to bed at 2 a.m., you're not going to get much time for that slow wave sleep. And so you may suffer physically as a result of that. You know, you may have more injuries, find it difficult to, you know, stay sick, stay well rather than get sick. You know, there's a lot of correlations that also show the, you know, a lot of illnesses are related to that sleep schedule. And not just, you know, it gets worse the later it gets, the later that sleep schedule gets, but there's also a direct relationship between wolves having a higher likelihood of having health issues like heart conditions, diabetes, cancer, mental health conditions, and an inverse relationship, so a lower likelihood of those health conditions for those who rise and sleep earlier, so lions. So basically the theory is the later you go to bed, the worse your health is going to be.
That's so interesting. So my sleep schedule is usually like 11 p.m. is my cutoff. I could keep staying up. Some nights I do if it's a really good series that I can't stop watching. But so 11 p.m. and then 7 a.m. will be my, that's kind of like my ideal sleep schedule. How is that like? Is that okay or is that still too late?
No. That's actually, I was going to say, have you been reading my book? Because that's actually the recommendation for wolves. Yeah. No, it's
great. Oh my God. I'm nailing the wolves, guys. That's so good. And what's the category for the lion? Like what time should lions go to bed and wake up?
So around about, you know, 9:30 at latest 10, and then getting up before 6 a.m.
Dude, right, nailing it. We're just nailing the chronotypes.
And then bears are in the middle of both, you know, they should go to bed ideally around 10:30, wake up 7:30. Right. They need the most, something unique about bears is they need the most sleep. So wolves have a variable sleep need. They can need a lot of sleep, but also they can often get by on less sleep and feel okay. Lions overall need less sleep and they don't particularly function well on more than 7 hours unless maybe they're grieving or going through stress, or they're sick. But when it comes to bears are the friends that we all have, that friend where they're like, I've slept for, you know, 8 or 9 hours and I still need to go back to sleep. That's a bear.
Yeah, right.
If it's consistent like that and they're always the ones that need that extra amount of sleep, and they're also the ones that, like, you know, wake them up after, you know, 7 hours and they will throw an absolute brick at you and tell you to leave them alone because they still need their golden hours of sleep. So they need a particularly longer amount of sleep, and that's very marked in most bears.
So interesting. And we'll link your quiz in the show notes so that any listeners can do it for themselves and find out what type they are. But Olivia, thank you so much for joining us. This has been such an interesting chat, hasn't it, Im?
It has. It really has. I'm going to go look more into my chronotypes. I love that it's got, like, you know, about your personality as well, not just how you sleep. It's so fascinating.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I think before we go, if it's okay, I just would like to share a few other recommendations on how, you know, your listeners, especially when they are stressed, can, reduce that stress before bed and get a better night's sleep, if that's okay.
Please do. Yes. Be out on art to hear some more tips.
These ones are good because I know we shared before, you know, obviously we shared about getting knowing your chronotype. That will help you reducing blue light, cutting off from tech, using lavender. In addition to that, I would strongly recommend as part of that bedtime routine, having an evening shower. That can really mark the separation between, you know, daytime and nighttime. And it also helps melatonin, that sleepiness hormone, which makes you feel more tired. Having a magnesium sleep supplement, especially when we're going under stress, the body uses more magnesium than usual. So that is really, really helpful because it is the main mineral to relax the muscles and body and brain. Then giving yourself a non-tech activity, reading, journaling, coloring in, giving yourself a massage, using one of those handheld massages. I recently just got one and it is such a good way to end the night, I must say. These are some things you can do instead of being on tech, which are really going to be helpful. And of course, using an eye mask. And another recommendation that I'd really strongly recommend, which has been incredibly helpful for both me personally and also my clients and family and friends as well, is to use reishi mushrooms. Now, reishi mushrooms are incredibly powerful. They act as adaptogens. They help the body produce less cortisol when we're stressed, and essentially that lowers that sympathetic nervous system, and it heightens that parasympathetic nervous system. So we definitely feel more relaxed, and it increases our levels of GABA, which is a calming hormone as well. And the thing about reishi that I love is that you can take it day and night. And that's why I wanted to suggest it, because when you're grieving, it's not just at night that you are feeling overwhelmed and anxious and stressed. It can come up at any time. And this is something that, for me personally, struggling with anxiety, I'm able to have some. It's a natural supplement, and it really has such a calming, potent calming effect on my body. And this is something that my mum has said it. My clients have said it, my friends have said it, and I'm just super passionate about it because it's just so effective, it's so natural, and we can really notice a difference, you know, almost immediately. And it's safe, you know, it's not.
So they're not magic mushrooms.
No.
So is it like a mushroom that you take, or is it a supplement that's mushroom in it?
Correct. So it's a supplement. So you could take it in capsules, or I take it in a droplet kind of, you know, bottle, like liquid form. Yeah. It tastes awful. Side note, it does taste awful, but the benefits far outweigh the, you know, moment of, not so nice taste. And I just wanted to really share that because, you know, of all the things that's helped me feel more calm overall when I need to sleep or just throughout the day, that's been one of the most effective as a supplement. So,
I've never ever heard of them. I'm going to Google them.
Yeah. I've already Googled it. I'm on it already. I'm on iHerb.com. Because, we both get anxiety. So I actually feel like I've tried everything, but I have not heard of reishi mushrooms.
There's a few recommendations that I can share with you and your audience, if you like, for sure. And also the recommended bedtime routine that I shared, I've got an ebook that I'm happy to share with all your listeners as well, so they don't have to worry about writing all the steps down and, you know, knowing what to do. I can just share that in a really easy to follow format as well. So then they can know what to do, and also share my link to the chronotype quiz as well.
Yes, that would be absolutely amazing. Thank you, Olivia. What a fountain of incredible knowledge you are. And I think there's going to be a lot of light bulb moments going on for our listeners. And I'm sure lots of Googling of chronotypes and reishi mushrooms. Reishi? Did I pronounce
reishi.
Reishi? Reishi. That's a restaurant down the road from me.
That's Rashay. So. God. She needs some more sleep.
I need some more sleep, yeah. Olivia, thank you so much. It's been so lovely to connect with you.
Likewise, ladies, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and I can understand why you are so well loved by so many across our nation. You're an absolute joy to chat with.
Oh, that's so lovely of you. Thank you so much. And right back at you. It's been such a great chat. We're talking about sleep, but we've made it fun.